For over 10 years, we've been bringing you killer metal music and frank discussions about heavy metal. Wait, who the hell is Frank? You are tuned into MSR Cast, brought to you by Mainstream Resistance. Here are your hosts, Kerry the Metal Geek and Sean the Metal Pigeon. Keep it metal.
Welcome, everyone, to episode number 229 of MSR Cast, your metal podcast. I am one of your hosts. I am Kerry the Metal Geek, and we are honored today to have back on the show Larry Roberts from Chicago's November's Doom. Welcome back to the show, sir.
Hey, what's going on, dude?
Good,
happy
man.
To be here.
I'm happy you are here. It's been about a year or so since we've been able to chat, and
right.
Something just happened in the band, right?
Yeah, a couple, as you say in Chicago, a couple, two, three things. Yeah.
Let's talk about the first thing, which I know more about, and that's the brand new album, the Nephilim
right.
Grove.
Nephilim Grove, yeah. Yep, came out November 1st. Believe it or not, that was not our idea. Everybody was kind of giving us some grief about that, going, oh, of course November's Doom puts out their album on November 1st. And it's like, that's the first time we've ever done that in the history of the band. We've never, you know, tried to be so dorkily clever like that. You know, that was all the record label. Record label said, we'll put it out November 1st, you know, that'll be perfect. And truthfully, we were ready to put this album out like 2 months ago.
Yeah.
So that's the way it goes.
Yeah. It's been hard to track down, even like on through Amazon and stuff. I had to wait a few rounds before the vinyl to get back in stock.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It's been selling really well. The pre-sales did great. Label seemed pretty happy with that. I know I've had some people say that they're still waiting on their special order stuff for like the more limited items. I know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they anticipated how well it was going to sell, which is both good and bad.
Right. I was about to say it's good for you guys, but bad for people trying to get it.
Right. So they ended up having more, orders, you know, put in for some of like the special things like the box set and the art book and all that stuff. So sorry, everybody out there, if you're still waiting for this stuff, we're, you know, we only just got our box sets like a few days ago. So
I saw the video that Paul put out of the unboxing.
Right.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. Very happy with it, man. It was really cool that, that Prophecy wanted to do that. Cause, you know, I'm a collector.
Yeah.
So to
as
have
am I, for sure.
Right. So to have collectible type stuff like that for the fans and everybody is awesome. You know, I'm right on board with that.
So let's talk about Prophecy Productions. How did you guys get involved with them?
Okay. Well, you know, as you know, I think one of the last times I spoke with you, things with us and the old record label had basically just become, I don't know, a void. You know, the End Records, they did a lot of really good stuff for us, and we were really grateful to them for all the years that they put into the band. But as time went by, it became pretty evident, not only to us, but I think even to like all you guys that saw where the band was going and where that label was going.
Yeah.
That it was just, we were just on completely different islands, you know? So finally it just reached a head. We ended our contract. That was all done. And we contemplated for a little while whether or not we were going to just, you know, are we going to just do this ourselves? I mean, at this point, I guess we technically could just be completely independent and do it all ourselves. And when we were still in the throes of trying to figure that out, when we heard from Prophecy Productions, and they said, you know, we're really interested in working with you guys because we think you guys would work really well within our roster. I mean, you know, you look at the bands they have had and still have, and I just think that it reminded me more of what we were going for when we first signed to the End Records back in the early 2000s. You know, at the time, that label had bands that were more like-minded with us. And that was why we chose that label over bigger labels that we were talking to at the time. So it just kind of felt like it made sense. Everybody we talked to over at Prophecy was really enthusiastic. They understood the band. They understood what we wanted. And it just seemed like the logical choice to go. I know a lot of people aren't big on record labels and stuff these days, and, you know, with good reason. But I think we made the right choice. I hope we made the right choice. So far, so good.
Yeah, I mean, you make a good point. What part do record labels even really play that much anymore? And it's good to have a label behind you that really focuses on the style of music that you guys play instead of, you know, going off to other directions like some others. I'm not mentioning any names there, but, you know.
Yeah. Well, I think people also just when people sit there and say, "Oh, you don't need record labels anymore." It's like, "Well, no, you can definitely get by nowadays without record labels, but for a lot of the things that we want to do, it helps to have a team of people working with you that help with promotion. They help with distribution, which is probably the biggest factor.
Right.
And there's something to be said for having people that are taking care of a lot of the business end of things for you and allowing us to just be artists. Because nowadays, anybody out there, I'm sure people that are listening to this know, when you're doing it the modern independent way, yeah, you got to write music, you got to play your guitar or sing or your drums or whatever you're going to do. But then you also have to learn all these other things. You have to learn about how to distribute your music and
marketing
and marketing
social media,
and all that.
Everything is.
And we do have a hand in all of that. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're not spring chickens, obviously, but at the same time, it can be so time consuming when we all have families and real life things that get in the way. And it's just when you have somebody like Prophecy Productions that is so enthusiastic about what you do, it's like, well, why wouldn't you want them in your corner? I mean, yeah, sure, they make money off of our product and stuff, hopefully, in theory, as long as we sell. But it's worth every penny as long as everybody on board is working towards the same goal.
And just looking at the artist on Prophecy Production, everything is just right up your alley. It's a lot of my favorite bands are on that label right now.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, so many good bands on there. We played the Prophecy Fest when we announced our signing back in late 2018, about a year ago, actually. We played the festival with them in New York, and it was just really cool to see, even on that fest, how diverse the bands were. They all had the same common thread of that they were underground, heavier bands. Yep. But, there was black metal, there was death metal, there was gothic, a lot of different stuff. And then you had us with the doom. And it reminded me of like going back to the old days a little bit. And I think we all liked the appeal of that.
It's nice to, when you have a show with such a variety of different styles, it's not, so you don't get sort of bored,
Oh, right. Yeah. We have that problem when it comes to trying to book shows or book tours and stuff, because a lot of times these, promoters will automatically want to put us on a tour, and they'll say, okay, we're going to have you guys, and then we'll have two or three support bands, and they're all just like slow funeral doom bands. Which, I mean, that's cool. I'm not knocking that style of music, but I'm just like, man, that's really skewing it to one way, November's Doom have slow doom stuff, but we have so much else going on in our music. We don't really want to pigeonhole ourselves or alienate our audience, where if we book a show or a tour with just doom metal bands, then all the fans who like our more death metal or our more progressive moments might kind of go like, that show seems kind of boring. So
let's talk about the new album. It's called Nephilim Grove. What does that mean? What is it? What is Nephilim Grove?
okay, well, there's different interpretations of the word Nephilim. In this instance, I believe Paul is referring to the more biblical meaning of it, which is Nephilim are sort of like, I could be wrong, so people can correct me, but I believe it's like what happens when, like, a divine being or an angel, like, mates with, like, an earthly being and stuff. They create what are called Nephilim. And, I mean, in terms of what it means with the Nephilim Grove and stuff, you know, I've told you this before. We try not to make things too direct. It's even though we're referring to something that it is slightly in a religious context, mm-hmm. it's not a religious theme song. It's not pro-religion. It's not anti-religion. It's just kind of using imagery to put forth like a little bit of an idea. It has to do with people that follow, blindly following and finding yourself, you know, in a situation where you're not necessarily doing the best thing for yourselves by just being a part of the following flock. Right. So to speak. But again, that doesn't necessarily, this isn't like an anti-religion thing or an anti-Christianity thing. It's using that imagery to convey a little bit more of a bigger idea. And we like to leave it ambiguous, man. We don't really want people to know exactly what it means. Look at the artwork, read it, come up with your own interpretations. You know, even if people go, oh, this reads completely religious to me, that's fine. Go ahead and read that. Just as long as people understand that that might not be the way we intended it, you know, personally.
So you mentioned the artwork. Let's talk about the artwork. It is beautiful, man.
Yeah. Paul got in contact with the artist who goes by the handle of Pig Hands. And I his hands are amazing. I think if you watch the art and lyric video we did for the title track, I mean, that's actual footage of him creating the art. He did that for us while he was creating it, and we knew we'd have to use it in some context because, you know, it's so precise. There's so many lines, and just the amount of time and precision that he took to make that artwork. It's gorgeous. It might be my favorite artwork we've ever done. It's definitely up there.
It is definitely beautiful. Yeah, the lyric video, it's great too. I know music videos are sort of the bane of a lot of a band, but that new style of just a lyric video where you can just hire somebody to create something out of your imagination. What do you feel is a big difference between those two, and which one do you feel is more indicative of what the band is like now?
Well, I mean, I love music videos. You know, I mean, I'm older. I grew up with music videos. I know that it gets hard to come up with new concepts that haven't been done already and whatnot. But I especially think for underground bands that don't get to tour all the time, I think music videos are really important, man, because for so many people out there, they're never going to get to see bands like ours, unfortunately. I mean, we do tour, but it's minimal, you know, we're not Metallica. So this is their opportunity to put any kind of visual mm-hmm. along with our songs. And when we write, and especially when Paul writes his words, we're always thinking about the visuals. You know, we're visually minded. And I love the whole lyric video thing. I think that we very consciously decided to do the lyric video for Nephilim Grove because we felt strongly about those words. We felt strongly about the way the words tie in with the artwork. And like I said, having the artwork of Pig Hands actually making it and stuff, having the video of that, it just was like a no-brainer. I mean, I know a lot of people look at music videos now like, oh, they're a waste of time. I don't know. I don't think so, man. We've garnered a lot of new fans from people who say, man, I just stumbled across your video in a search on YouTube,
yeah.
You know, and I never heard you guys before. And now I'm a big fan and I just watched like all of your videos from the last 10 years. I think it's great. No, this album in particular, we've already got three videos out. The lyric video for Nephilim Grove, the kind of performance-y video thing for What We Become, and then the in the studio making of video for Petrichor. The response to all of them has been great, and we actually are already planning on video number four.
Wow.
Yeah, we're going to do a lot this time. I mean, I think that more bands should focus on that. They should focus on doing more with social media, mm-hmm. YouTube, all that kind of stuff. I mean, it's hard getting people out the door anymore, Kerry. You know how that goes, you yeah. know. You know, there's so much going on out there, so many concerts. Everybody now, because of, you know, the lack of record sales comparatively to how it was, everybody's touring. So at any given time, there's like 12 metal shows in a week or something most major cities. So everybody is touring and trying to spread the word that way, like old school. Touring's great, but man, you've got these tools right there at your fingertips. I mean, your iPhone is good enough to film a music video with anymore.
No, that's totally true. Yeah, people do that too.
Right.
You mentioned YouTube. What I like to do is I'll find an artist that I like and just let it go to random. Whatever is going to play next, I discover a lot of good stuff that way.
I do as well. Yeah, I'll go and look up, you know, say like, oh, okay, there's a new lyric video out for Mayhem or something, mm-hmm. and I let it play. And then I'll see there's a couple other things that are in the up next category on there. And I go, you know what? I've never heard that band. May as well let it play and check it out. And
right.
It's the way. I know that a lot of people, like I said, they're stubborn and they're fighting against it, but I see new bands. I've got friends that are in like bands that have just recently started, you know, touring and are up and coming and newly signed. And I look at them and I say to them, like, how come you guys haven't done any kind of videos? You don't have a lyric video. You don't have any like pro shot live videos, like, you know, even just basic good old music videos, mm-hmm. anything like that. Q&A videos, playthrough videos, you know, yeah. all that stuff. And they go, oh, yeah, you know, we don't care about that stuff, man. And I'm like, hey, you run your band and your business the way you want to, but you're selling yourself short by doing it that way, because if you're just relying on, well, we're just going to play a bunch of shows, you're going to have a much harder time getting your stuff heard. Mm-hmm. And you never know. I mean, you never know. There are people that I've become friends with from bigger, more successful bands, or people from other parts of the business who never would have come to see us play live, but they saw one of our videos. And we made that business connection. And because of that, it led to a big thing for us. I mean, I just don't understand why bands wouldn't want to cover all their bases.
I think music videos in this day and age are just as important as they were for metal bands coming out in like the 80s and they would be on Headbangers Ball. Now it's YouTube. So it's tailor made for what you're looking for. And you're going to always find something new and exciting.
I think it's even better now than it was back then.
Oh, for sure. Cause before it was force fed to you. Now it's like,
right.
You get to pick what you want.
Exactly. You know, exactly. And then you've got, you know, all the different podcasts, you know, you've got MSR, right. You've got Metal Geeks, and then you've got like Sam Dunn up in Canada with his Banger TV and all that kind of stuff. Like, it's right there at your behest, you know.
Exactly right. There's so many great heavy metal podcasts that are out there that really show the love to the genre, which is why I don't consider anybody else out there competition. It's we're all in it together, you know.
No, I've never understood the competition thing. Mm-hmm. I just had this conversation with somebody in another band. I won't name them just in case, but and another a bigger band the other day, we were talking about scenes and stuff. Yep. And, you know, the Chicago scene was always and still is. It was always so competitive. And I mean, there's healthy competition. Like, I think it's good in terms of like, oh, well, the band, you know, this other band that we play with in town just put out a really great album. And you know what? We're going to try to make an album that's even better than that. Like, that's healthy competition. That's fine. But when it's that competition where it's like, oh, fuck these other bands, mm-hmm. Fuck them. Oh, that band just got signed. Fuck them. They're pussies. We're just going to badmouth them because it's not us. Man, there is a lot of that in Chicago. Mm. There always has been. And that's why even though Chicago has a ton of great bands, we've never had that recognition for a unified scene like Seattle or Florida mm-hmm. or England, you know, with the doom scene. Like, it's always been so hard to get people to just stick together and support each other, you know, and not be sour grapes if you see right. that another band got signed or another band got on a big tour, you know, like. I just never – November's Doom were always the outcasts because of that, because everybody else was being shitty and competitive, and we were always just sort of like, hey, we're good with everybody and everything, you know? Like, we'll go to all of your record release shows, man, because we support you, but then we do our record release show and, you know, it's – our fans and friends are there, but not a lot of the other bands, you know? It's kind of weird.
There's definitely some of that down here in Houston, that high school clique type stuff. And it's like, mm-hmm. I'm too old for that shit, man.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, at this point, obviously we've established ourselves as what we are and who we are. And we don't really care anymore anyway. I mean, if they want to support us, cool. If they don't, cool. You know, we're too far gone for that. But mm-hmm. I mean, it's just a shame because you can't get it through to people that there's all these tools at your fingertips with social media and the internet and all that stuff, plus networking, plus all these podcasts, plus just, you know, the bands that are down the street from you that are trying to do the same thing. It's like if everybody would literally just get off their bullshit and get together and work together on this, it would be such a better situation. But, you know, it's every man for them, every man and woman for themselves, right. You know.
And that's in every kind of fandom and genre too. It's
yeah, I suppose that's true.
Let's get into a track from the brand new album. We mentioned the title track, Nephilim Grove. Let's go ahead and play that. What can you tell me about this song before we get into it?
Well, you know, it's one of the, I guess you could say in ways, more doomy, ethereal, lighter-ish songs on the record. We didn't really want to do like we have in the past where we've always had that like ballad. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like there's always been the Autumn Reflection or the Twilight Innocence or one of those kind of things on the album. And this time we sort of said, man, let's just put it all together. Like, let's not worry about we got to make super brutal song and a super light song and all this. Like, let's just be a little bit more organic and have the ideas flow. And if we have a song where it goes from super ethereal to like crushingly heavy, let's just do it. You know, I really feel like this is the most melting pot-ish album we've done of our styles. And this song really exemplifies that. I think you've got almost all of the best elements of November's Doom in this one song.
All right. Well, so, let's get into it. This is the title track from Nephilim Grove. This is November's Doom. We'll be right back. Thank you.
Close your eyes.
Welcome back to the show, my friends. We are still here with Larry Roberts from November's Doom. We just heard something from the brand new album, the title track, Nephilim Grove, and we're going to get more into the album. So I probably have asked you this question before, but what is the process of coming up with a concept for an album and then the final completion? What does that look like for you guys?
Well, I mean, it varies, I think, depending on where we're at the time and what's going on with people. But usually the basic construction of an album is that I and the other guitar player, Vito, and our drummer, Gary, will start rehearsing and just kind of riffing on some ideas. Every now and then Vito and I might have entire songs, but more often than not, I think we just have like a few parts here and there. Mm-hmm. And we get together and we just kind of play our ideas for each other. We sort of riff around on them and start getting an idea of where our heads are at musically, because again, you know, anybody that knows us knows that we've got a lot of different influences and we can sort of be all over the place at times. So it usually starts out pretty all over the place in the beginning. And then as we start sorting through the ideas and everybody puts their stamp on it, it starts to come together. Gradually, we start sending ideas over to our bassist, Mike, and to Paul, the vocalist, who kind of listen to the stuff on their own, start formulating their own ideas for it. And then, I mean, really, most of these songs don't start seeing full formation from all the band members until, man, usually like a good 2/3 of the way through the process. Mm. You know, I mean, Vito and Gary and I will go through a lot of demoing and deleting and reshuffling of things. I mean, a few of the songs on this album went through 2 or 3 different iterations before it finally got to what you hear on the album. So that's usually it. Paul depends. I mean, in terms of where he comes, how he comes up with his concepts and stuff. Sometimes he's got a fully formed idea early on, and then other times, like with our last album, Hamartia, I mean, he didn't have anything until the 11th hour. I mean, he was really struggling and having a hard time focusing. Once he figured it out, the stuff he came up with was great. But I think this album, it started to come to him a little bit sooner, and he had much stronger ideas, not only about the concept behind the songs, but where he wanted to go vocally. I mean, man, his vocals on this album are great.
Oh yeah.
So far beyond what he's done in the past. I mean, he's been gradually getting better, but I think on this album, he really pushed himself to come up with interesting patterns, interesting melodies, and not stuff you've heard from him before. You know,
it's not to blow smoke again up your guys' asses or anything like that, but he is definitely one of my favorite death doom vocalist of all time. He just his guttural stuff and then his clean singing mixed together, it's just amazing.
Plus then on this album he did a few different things. Uh-huh. He went for more of like an in-between kind of sound, which is funny because I see people talking about, oh, they're sounding like Mastodon, and I'm like, yeah, I can see that, but that's not at all, like, Paul doesn't listen to Mastodon. Mm-hmm. He doesn't listen to that stuff. That's not at all where he was coming from. He was coming from that, like, Lee Dorian Cathedral.
Yeah, that it reminds me of the band Suspiria. They do that.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Oh yeah, we dig Suspiria, you know. We like those guys. We're friendly with those guys. So, awesome. I mean, that's killer that you picked that out of it. I mean, that wasn't like a direct influence, but mm-hmm. I'm happy to be in that league, you know. It's just funny how people hear things a little differently like that, but Paul for years wasn't comfortable with doing something like that. Mm-hmm. And finally he just said, man, I need to do something different. I don't know how you're going to feel about it. As soon as I heard him sing it, on the first song on the album, and Petrichor, that's the first vocal you hear on the album is him doing that Lee Dorian style
right.
vocal. And as soon as I heard it, I'm like, dude, I love that. like you are doing it, you know, cause he wasn't sure. He, you know how people are out there. They're so nitpicky about that stuff.
If all the keyboard warriors.
Oh yeah. Well, you know, people are so picky with their tastes. They love his growls, but they don't like his clean vocals. They love his clean vocals, but they don't like death metal growls, and they want more of one or the other. And then Paul all of a sudden starts doing this different, weird, you know, throaty kind of thing, like this cathedral vocal. And we've already had a few people say, oh, what's that about? Well, you know, it's about, we've been around for 30 years and we have a lot of influences and we want to try something. And as long as we think it sounds good, we're going to do it.
Has it really been 30 years?
Yeah. Paul started this in 89. And I mean, the first songs that were written as November's Doom, I think were written right around 91, 92.
Wow.
So, I mean, you know, you figure I'm not even an original member. I mean, I joined in January, February of 1999. So I'm coming up on my 21st year in this band. And I'm not even original. So
that's been amazing. A long time. It's been a long time since I've seen you guys live. Truthfully, it was, I think, Milwaukee Metal Fest, 99, 2000, maybe 2000.
Yeah. Yeah, it was probably 2000. I think when we talked about this before, I think we determined it was 2000.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're a different beast now. I mean, not knocking what we did back then, but I think, man, we're so much better now. This lineup that we have now, these guys, Gary and Mike and Vito were such solid musicians live. And like I said, not knocking the old members because they were great too, but it's just a different kind of energy.
Mm-hmm.
You need to come see us play, dude.
I need to, yeah.
Come on.
I need to get back up there, man. Or y'all need to come down here.
Yeah, well, we're talking about it. We're working on it.
Yeah, what is the touring going to be like for this album?
Well, right now there isn't really, I mean, we're doing our usual like Chicago show that we have to do every couple years. Mm-hmm. We're playing with Macabre, at Reggie's in Chicago coming up in about 4 weeks.
Oh.
And that'll be fun. You know, that'll be awesome. I'm sure.
Maybe I should try to make a weekend out of it.
Dude,
that'd be great.
Let me know, man. If you want to come up here, we'll set you up. You can, I'm sure you could stay at one of our places or something if need be. You guys are more than welcome, and we'll get you into the show, all that business. So we'll talk off air.
Yeah, for sure.
But we've got that. We've got Maryland Death Fest coming up in May. Of course, we're looking forward to that because, there's bands like Bloodbath and Dismember
I'm so disappointed I'm not going to be able to be there. That's the same. It's right around the time of my main work event. So
Right. I'm, yeah, I know.
Timing, I'm like, if not, I would definitely be there.
Right. And then the only other thing that we haven't announced the official dates yet, mm-hmm. but the only other thing that is like pretty sure is going to happen is that in July, August, around there, we are going to be playing a full tour of Australia and New Zealand.
That's amazing.
Yeah. We're looking forward to that.
Have you ever been there? Have you ever toured there?
No, not to play. No, I've wanted to play there for so long. I mean, it's an amazing place. It's an amazing part of the world, and we have great fans down there. I mean, I've met a few over the years. I've talked to people, online and stuff over the years. There's killer fans down there, just good people. Plus, there's all sorts of Australian exclusive vinyl down there that I really want, because I'm a big Kiss fan.
Yeah.
And Kiss were big in Australia, and there's all sorts of like Australian pressings of Kiss vinyl that you can't get here and this. So I've already made my list, man.
We'll definitely touch that vinyl topic during the Metal Geeks episode. Cause there's some stuff I'd like to talk about, but
all right.
Yeah.
All right.
So just to let everybody know, this is going to be sort of a 2-part episode. MSRcast will be more of the musical aspect, And then, of course, Metal Geeks will be more of the geeky side of our conversation. So, everybody, this is, make sure you check out both episodes if you're only listening to this one.
Right.
Yeah, I've become a little bit of a vinyl obsessed person recently.
I've always been into vinyl. You know, I've always liked it in terms of my obsession or collecting or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's had peaks and valleys over the years, but recently I've really started to get back into it. So yeah, we'll talk more about that.
Yeah, for sure.
Show.
Let's take a quick little break and play something else from the album. I have some songs pulled out that are my favorites on the album.
Yeah, I'd love to know what you.
You mentioned Petrichor before with his with Paul's vocals, so let's get into that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of my favorites on the album. It's actually the first song I wrote for the album.
Oh, very cool. How did that song come about?
It was one of those ones that didn't have any kind of real strong influence from any particular mm-hmm. style or artist. I mean, I've always got my desire, you know, somewhere deep inside of me, I always wanted to be in Morbid Angel, like around 1994. So there's a little bit of that in there. There's a little bit of, little bit of barrenness in there for some of my riffing. I can hear the guitar tone. Yeah, it's all over the place, man. There, it was just kind of one of those. I just threw something out there organically, and it took a little while. Like I said, it went through a couple iterations, and I had to pare it down because the song was way more epic and all over the place at the start. And over time, I made it a little more concise. Mm-hmm. But it was one of those ones where right off the bat, I was almost certain it was going to be the album opener, and that was before we even had that creepy Exorcist intro thing that we came up with. There was just something about it that I said, I don't know what Paul's going to do on this yet. It's got a long way to go, but I have a feeling this is the album opener, and sure as shit, that's what it turned into.
And this is the first song that I heard from the album. This is the first single that you guys did, right?
Right. Right. Yeah.
This was my first taste into the album. I was hooked.
Yeah. Good. I really like this song. It's another one that I think, and it was the reason why this one and Nephilim Grove were the first two songs released, because mm-hmm. I think if you listen to those two songs, you get a pretty good idea of what we're about in 2019, you know, where we're at. Those songs, along with the third single, I think that if you had to pick two or three songs and say, okay, this is what this band is now, I'd say those are the three songs that you would play.
Alrighty.
So yeah, I'm glad you picked that one.
Cool. So let's get into it. This is Petrichor from the brand new November's Doom, Nephilim Grove. We'll be right back. And we're back to MSRcast. We just finished listening to another brand new track off Nephilim Grove from November's Doom. That was Petrichor. And we discussed it right before we played it. Still perfect opening track.
Good. Yeah. I mean, that's always one of the big things that we worry about is having the perfect opening track. I know a lot of people don't even bother listening to whole albums anymore, but I do, you know, we in the band do. So we still approach this like old school, like we care about the running order of songs on an album and making sure this song goes into that song and stuff. So yeah, when people say things like that, like, oh, this is a perfect opening track, it's like, awesome. Like, that's very validating.
People don't realize that the order of songs on an album can really make or break that album.
Absolutely it does. Absolutely it does. I mean, I have to, with certain albums out there, I have to listen to them in a certain order. If they're, if I accidentally put something on iTunes or Spotify or something like that, and I have it on shuffle, you know, if I go to listen to Revolver by the Beatles or something like that, or even, you know, even something like, you know, Rain and Blood by Slayer or something, if I have it on shuffle and Angel of Death doesn't go into Piece by Piece, which then goes into Necrophobic,
it freaks you out. It's weird.
It's wrong. It's just wrong. It's like, because they belong. People don't understand that a lot of artists intentionally put songs in a certain order to be one collective idea, you know, one big collective. It'd be like watching a movie or reading a book out of order.
Right. And a lot of the bands, like you mentioned, from the 90s, no matter what genre, it was very important their late 80s or not middle to the mid 90s of actually songs would sort of blend in together. Slayer was really well known for this, you know,
right?
Especially
right.
Rain and Blood. I mean, it's to me, it's one song. It's like one full listen.
I agree. I mean, totally. I listen to an album like Master of Puppets by Metallica or Rust in Peace by Megadeth, any of those. And to me, those are like the sequencing of those albums is as much a part of what appeals to me about that album as just how good the individual songs are. I mean, I need to hear Holy Wars go into Hangar 18, you know, and so on. Like, it has to be that way.
And it's it's a memory thing too. It makes you feel, it reminds you of when you were listening to it, when you first heard it. And it sort of has like that memory thing of just making you feel good.
That, and I also think that it's weird when people go and listen to just one song from your new album, like like Nephilim Grove. People go and just listen to one song, and then they make a decision about how they're going to feel about that album based on that song. And I mean, I guess there's some bands you can do that with, but man, November's Doom is not that band. You can't just listen to Petrichor or just listen to What We Become or just listen to Blacklight and say, oh, well, this is representative of the band. I guess this is what the album sounds like. It's like, no, man. It's like, again, it would be like reading one chapter of a Harry Potter book and then going, oh, okay, I get what the whole thing's about. It's like, no, you're not going to even come close.
No.
You get a taste for the general feel, but that's about it, man. There's so much more going on here.
How do you digest music? How do you discover new things? You mentioned Spotify before, and that's a big thing for me. And you mentioned hearing one song at a time and how that is not really indicative of what the full album experience is going to be. But each week they create a weekly new playlist of with new tracks. Yes. And I go through that every week, and mine's a little off. It's off weird. Like, I'll get Harry Nilsson and then like Nile together.
Right.
But that's okay with me. But then if I listen to that and something really catches my ear, I'll go back and listen to the full album from there.
Absolutely. I do listen to that, that weekly, I don't do it every week, but I do listen to that sometimes, on Spotify. I know people complain about the evils of streaming and stuff. Mm. And I mean, there's some validity to that because Lord knows we don't see a dime from it.
Right.
And you know, and when people get uptight about that and they go, oh, well, why do you care so much about money and you're an artist? It's like, you know what? I don't even care. Listen, honestly, just putting this out there for something for people to think about. I don't really even care that we don't get money from it. What people don't understand is that somebody is getting money from it.
Right.
Somebody out there is making a lot of money from it. That's where it gets annoying. I mean, think about, you know, if you go and you do something for charity, you go and do charity work, you know, and things like that. And you're like, well, I'm doing charity because, you know, it's the right thing to do. And I don't care about getting paid. I just want to get it out there and be a good person. And then you come to find out that somehow the organization you were doing charity for was making like a shitload of money off of your charity work. You know, it's like, that's not right.
Right.
You know, if I'm not, I'm the artist, I wrote this song, I recorded it, I did all this. If I'm not getting paid for it, then nobody should be getting paid for it. You know what I mean? You know, or at least we should be getting a little bit more something. I'd rather, in many cases, just give the music away if that's going to be the way it is. But my thing about streaming is I think streaming is great because I fully believe in people being able to discover stuff and to sample stuff. I've never had a problem with people sampling stuff for, you know, I you know, there's so much music out there nowadays, man. Yep. We can't blind buy things anymore like we did when we were kids, you know. Yeah, I could do that back when I was a kid and see, you know, walk into a record store and see Walls of Jericho by Helloween and have never heard the album, heard the band or anything before. But I look at the name, I look at the album cover and I go, okay, that's badass. Like, you know, and buy it for $5 or $6 or whatever. You can't do that anymore. It's
you
so,
definitely can't.
It's so hard to do that. So, man, I think it's great. But usually when I find something on Spotify, if I really like it, then I go buy it. I buy it on iTunes or I'll actually buy the record. You know, usually I buy vinyl if I'm going to buy it, you know, because that's aside from streaming. That's the way I prefer to listen to stuff. I listen to vinyl almost daily.
Wow.
You know,
I wish I do buy some CDs still, but they have to be in a digipack format. I'm a stickler for that now. I don't like regular old jewel case CDs anymore. And that they really need to go away from that because it's not really helping.
Well, here's a funny thing. When we were getting ready to put the album out, I saw a thread on a forum and people were talking about our album. And there was a bunch of people in there that were bitching about how they found out that our CD was coming out in Digipak because they hate Digipak.
Oh, what?
So, yeah, I you know, you can't please everybody.
That's true.
I mean, you just can't. I mean, we can only put it out in so many formats. You know, if it was up to me, I'd put our album out on freaking 8-track, man. You know,
I got an 8-track player now.
I do too. I was gonna say I'd pop it into my old little Panasonic TNT box looking 8-track player and listen to Petrichor.
I got some 8-tracks. If you want some, I'll send you some.
Yeah.
All right.
I'll take them. Absolutely, man.
Cool. I was looking for a place to put them.
Oh yeah, send them to me, man.
So yeah, I listen to Spotify a lot too, and I definitely see where you're coming from. Like, I assume we might have had this conversation before, but I remember going back into the record stores and being able to just looking at an album cover and go, "Hey, I want to hear this." They would pop it open for you, and you would listen to it, and if you liked it, you would buy it.
Right.
That's what I use Spotify for now.
Exactly. That's my point too. Yeah. Absolutely. And a lot of things I listen to on Spotify are things I already own, things I've already bought.
Sometimes it's easier.
Right. Yeah. I mean, if I can have it on my phone so I can listen to it easier in the car, but I still bring CDs into the car.
I do too. You know? People think I'm weird for that, but yeah, I'll still buy CDs.
Too. Yeah. I mean, obviously because I'm a musician, I'm going to do it, but I support all the formats, man. I, you know, I think it's all good. Any way that people are discovering new music nowadays and stuff that they really get into, I'm fine with it. The only thing that ever bums me out is the people that have that disposable attitude towards music where it's all just disposable to them. And it's like, that's a bummer.
No,
you know,
I support the bands that I love. I'll go see them when they perform. I'll buy way too much merchandise from them, because I know they get a lot of that. But
hey, I gave you guys a bunch of merchandise.
Oh yeah, you did. We still wear those all the time, dude. We get comments all the time. Where did you get that shirt?
That's awesome. Yeah, no, and I, that's aside from that, I love you guys. I know you guys are going to do that, and that's another reason why I'm only too happy to do that. I mean, you know, again, that's the thing. We are not a greedy band. If we can afford to do something, if we can afford to give people stuff for free, man, we're all for it. Mm-hmm. As long as we can afford it, man, you know. So, yeah, we had those shirts. I knew you guys would wear them. I knew you were supportive. I'm like, absolutely take them. You know,
yeah, I proudly wear the November's Doom patch on my battle jacket every day.
Oh, there's people that are envious of that, man. Because I get messages every month, at least a couple of them, of people going, we need more patches. We need more patches. And we need to find another company now that makes good quality patches. So we've been out of those for a while. So there's a lot of fans out there that are clamoring for.
Yeah, I'm in some of those. there's patch trading groups on Facebook.
Oh,
and stuff
I know.
Now. Yeah. A buddy of mine. We'll get into that. But I know one other person in Houston area that actually has a November's Doom patch on his battle jacket.
Oh, that's kick ass.
Yeah, and he's a really cool guy. So we talked about new music. You had a couple of new bands that you wanted to, well, not new, but new releases.
New albums, yeah.
Let's talk about that, and we'll play those.
I really like the new album from Mayhem called Damon. I think it's a, you know, you can't, I hate when people say, you know, it's a return to form or whatever. I mean, I like almost everything that Mayhem has ever done, but, you know, I thought their last album, Esoteric Warfare, was really decent, was a really good album, but there's just something about Damon, man. When I first listened to it, it just pummeled me. I was like, this is, sometimes you get those albums that you need to hear at the right place in the right time and everything. And Mayhem did that for me this year, man. They put out just the album I wanted to hear, man. It's like, it's to me, it's probably the most black metal-y thing they've done in a while, you know. It's but it's not, again, it's not like they went back in time and they're sounding like Demysterious or something like that. It's definitely got new ideas. It's got, you know, a conglomeration of stuff they've done over the decades, but there's just something about the vibe of it, man. It really hits you in the face. It's a great album.
A buddy of mine, we're talking about all the new releases this year, and we were talking about this being the year of black metal, no matter what band, what style, is it progressive or is it symphonic or is it like Dark Throne or Mayhem? We're like, this 2019 has been the year of black metal for a lot of things.
I could see that. Yeah. I mean, I definitely think it's kind of reached an apex now in terms of like attention, and black metal is diversified so much.
It's like an overall, it's weird to call some bands black metal when they're really not. They have a little bit of the influence, but there's prog black metal now. And like, it's so amazing how this small little genre has just exploded.
Well, a lot of these bands, these black metal bands have, I mean, bands like Satyricon and Mayhem and them have for years been greatly pushing the boundaries of even, you know, long before a lot of these other bands came along doing that. I mean, they were pushing boundaries of what you could expect from them, and they were sort of the trendsetters. I mean, black metal, I don't consider myself like a hardcore black metal fan or anything like that, but I definitely think they're one of the more interesting subgenres, offshoots, just because it's one of those genres that it's ironic that it started so narrow-minded in a way.
And so lo-fi.
Right, so lo-fi and narrow-minded, and I love that early black metal stuff, you know, because I was there with that stuff back at the time, you know. I mean, I'm almost 50 years old. I traded for those demos back in the day, back in 1990 and all that, 91. You know, I remember when Dead was still alive, you know, and all that stuff. So I love that stuff, but I love that black metal is one of the more diverse genres. You know, you don't automatically know what you're going to expect
right
from it. And that keeps it interesting to me. And so that's why it does tend to be a little bit more of a go-to genre, you know, for me.
So we're going to play something from, what song are we going to play from the New Mayhem?
Oh man, any of them. They're all good, dude. Seriously. Pick one.
How about The Dying False King?
Sure. Absolutely, man.
Awesome. And then we're going to play something from Sarke?
Yes, yes. Yeah.
Tell me about that, man.
Okay, well, Sarke is a band that was formed, and they've actually been around for a while, but people over here in the West really don't seem to know too much about them. And they were formed by the main guy that everybody would know from Sarke is Ted from Darkthrone, otherwise known as Nocturno Culto. Everybody would know that from him self-referencing himself in Darkthrone songs all the time.
Right.
And everything. But he's the lead singer in this band, and it's made up of members from different bands. It was made, there's guys from the band Kold, K-H-O-L-D, in there. There's members of guys that played with Satyricon and some other, you know, some other bands like that. Guys that played with Borknagar and stuff, you know, Spiral Architect. There's a bunch of different Norwegian based musicians there. And what's cool about it is, it again, it's one of those things where you could say that Sarke is like, they're black metal, but I don't know. They kind of defy categorization. Some of their stuff just rocks. You know, it's just kind of got that black and roll, death and roll kind of style to it. You know, just good like throwback headbanger stuff.
Yeah.
But then it's got really proggy sections, amazing keyboard stuff going on in this. Some excellent lead guitar work. You know, it's not just out of tune, pentatonic, you know, black metal leads and stuff. It's like there's some really technical playing that goes on in it, but it has a very cold, bleak kind of feel throughout it. It never gets happy. You know what I mean? There's not a lot of major key stuff, and when it does rock, it just still retains this dark vibe to it. Man, I just love this band's entire discography. Their last album, which came out a couple years ago, I think it was called, I'm sure I'm butchering this. Anybody that knows how to speak Norwegian is going to be like, oh, you stupid American. But it's called like Vigur.
Yeah. I'm looking at that.
I think it's
right
called,
now.
Yeah. Vigur. Yeah. It's like,
it.
Yeah, it's that album. I'm still in love with that album. I listen to it like every week, but, this new album, I'm still kind of getting into it. And it's great. It's just really, it's really good.
So the new album is, I'm going to try to pronounce this, is Gastverso.
Yeah, Gastverso. Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah.
What song do you want to play off of that?
Do
you have a favorite yet?
Man, I think, gosh, could maybe play Ghost War.
Sounds good. All right, so we're just going to take a quick break. We're going to get into Mayhem and then Sarke.
Yeah.
And I said it with a question mark at the end. I don't know why. So, like, am I pronouncing it right? And we'll be right back.
Betrayer. in the ghost war.
Back to the show, my friends. We're here with Larry Roberts from November's Doom, and we just played a couple of new releases that have been tickling his metal geek, which we just heard Sarka with the song Ghost War, and the brand new Mayhem, The Dying False King. What a fucking great name.
Yeah. Well, it's Mayhem. I mean, Mayhem's amazing.
I've never seen them live.
Really?
Yeah, maybe next year we'll be able to solve that.
Yeah, well, yeah, they're coming and everything. I hope. I think I hope that's still going to happen. You never know anymore.
They're supposed to be touring with Abbott, so we'll find out about that later. We're not going to go into that.
But see, it's not Abbott. It's Abbott.
Abbas.
You pronounce it Abbott.
Abbas. I'm saying it like a Texan. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Abbott.
Abbas.
Abbott. But yeah, I love that band. I haven't seen them in a few years. We played with them in Maryland a few years ago, and they were great as always. Jorn, Necro Butcher, mm-hmm. You guys, Jorn is a is a really, really, really cool guy. Loves November's Doom, is very supportive of us and stuff. So, I mean, support the new Mayhem. Go buy it.
Definitely. What else has been... that's maybe not so metal that's been making you excited this year?
Oof, gosh.
Or even other metal bands, that's fine too. But I know me and you both have a wide variety of bands that we listen to. So,
I got to be honest. There hasn't been a lot of newer stuff that I've really been listening to recently. I've been going back and buying a lot of re-releases of things and stuff like mm-hmm. that. So, it's the same old boring stuff. People are going to say the Abbey Road 50th yep. anniversary
sounds
that came
amazing.
Out. Oh, my God.
There's stuff on that I never heard before. I'm like, oh, my God.
Right. Right. Hearing Paul's version of Goodbye, the song he gave to What's-Her-Face and everything. That's amazing. Hearing the Nebulous version of The Long One, of the medley mm-hmm. and everything, with Her Majesty put where it's supposed to be in between right. Mean Mr. Mustard and Palutena Pam. That's the kind of thing that... as an old nerd, as an old geek, I just get so giddy about. It's weird. There, I've gotten little glimpses of what's been going on in more popular stuff and everything. And I know everybody's talking about Billie Eilish and all this stuff. And
never heard a song from her.
I did. I checked it out, and I'm like, okay, this is interesting. I could see why it's appealing. It's nothing about it necessarily made me go, wow, this has never been done before. It's just, you know, to the average 16-year-old kid, it seems new, you know. I like the new stuff I've heard from Haim, you know, the female trio.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've got new stuff out that's been coming out. And Haim, I think in terms of pop, I think they're absolutely brilliant. Love them. Love them. I know people are going to probably groan at that because, you know, the metal people are going to go, oh, God, you know, it's like dancey pop stuff. But man, they're so good. They write, they play their own stuff. They're super talented. They, you know, I love that they incorporate like South American tribal drum stuff into their music a lot, which is definitely a little not your average, you know, pop star,
for sure not.
Pop, you know, music kind of stuff. Haim are excellent band. And as much as I like their studio stuff live, they're amazing. They're like a different creature live. I feel like their records are more tailored to be radio friendly and stuff. But when you go see them live, it's got like a much heavier, funkier edge to it and everything. So
they're the Soulfly of the pop world.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. I like them. I don't dislike Soulfly, but I like Haim better than I like Soulfly. I know that's like, that's, you know, that's the metal people are going to be like, oh my God, what is wrong with this guy? But you know me, I like my pop, man.
So I've been really, really trying to digest as much metal this year as I can. And there's been so much good stuff. A lot of death doom for me. And a lot of progressive style black metal for me this year. It's just
right.
My list might surprise a lot of people when we do our best of.
Nice. You know, speaking of, I wouldn't call them death doom exactly, although they kind of get lumped into that. There's a band from Chicago who put an album out this year, and the band's called Varaha. It's V-A-R-A-H-A. So, yeah, they're a band called Varaha from Chicago. They put out an album. I believe they're on, they might be on Prosthetic Records.
Okay.
And if you're looking for more like atmospheric, moody, epic kind of doom, death, black, cold black metal kind of melding together kind of thing, like, man, they're really, really good. It's a great debut album, man.
We should play something from them on this episode.
Absolutely.
I would love to.
Yeah.
I'm looking them up right now on Spotify, which is the easiest way. What's your favorite track off that album?
Let me think. Oh gosh, I'm trying to remember the titles of their of their songs. I think like Severance is a good one.
Yep. I'm seeing that. We can play that one. That's perfect.
Yeah.
And there's a new band that I wanted to sort of talk about. I hope I'm pronouncing them correctly. They're called Wilderun.
Wilderun.
There you go. Do you know them?
Yeah, Wilderun. Yes.
It's just of a progressive black metal if it was written by Devin Townsend.
Right. Well, Wilderun, it's Evan Berry's band.
Oh.
Right? If I'm correct. If I'm thinking of, I believe, if I'm, I hope I'm not getting that wrong. Yeah, Wilderun is based out of New England, right?
It looks like Massachusetts. That's correct.
Yes, that's Evan Berry's band. He was one of the guys who started the band Immortal Bird.
Oh,
I don't know if you're familiar with Immortal Bird at all. Yeah, our drummer Gary was in Immortal Bird for a while. Was on their one of their recent albums, but
that's right,
Evan Berry was almost the drummer for November's Doom.
Wow.
Yeah.
Small world there.
Yeah. He's a great guy. Really talented multi-instrumentalist. Comes up with really cool stuff. That's a really good band. I'm glad you're checking them out. I've heard a few people recently mention them and stuff. I've heard that I like it. I haven't listened to it as much as I probably should have, but for me, music is mood. We're getting about that time. It's getting about, that's what I said, like, you know, the new Sarka, the new Mayhem, Varaha, all that stuff. It's really good for this time of year. Yeah. You know, I find myself kind of getting into that. So yeah, that's a good call on that, man.
So, I think what we're going to do now, we're going to take a quick, play some music. We're going to play another new track from the Nephilim Grove. We're going to go ahead and get into Varaha, and then we're going to play some Vildarun. Now I'm going to say it correctly now, hopefully.
What song are you going to play by them?
I'm trying to go back to what I've listened to the most on that album. I know the first track is like 14 minutes long, so we may not do that one. Maybe the second track is called O Resolution.
O Resolution. Yeah, I know that one. That's awesome. A good tune.
So let's get into those tracks and let's get some metal into your ears. And besides the Vildarun and the Varaha, we're going to play another one of my favorite tracks off the new album. And that's Adagio. Am I saying it correctly?
Oh, Adagio. Yes.
Awesome. So tell me about this track. Where does it come from? Because I know an album with that title that's a favorite of mine.
Okay. Adagio is, I believe that's like a musical term for just slow, you know, basically playing slow and everything, you know, Paul with his words and his terms that he likes to use. this was a song that was predominantly mine musically. I was coming at it with, it's going to sound weird, but the mood I was in at the time when I wrote it was I wanted to write something that sounded like if Chris DeGarmo from Queensryche joined a doom metal band.
Okay. I can see that.
Yeah, it was kind of so, you know, I was listening to Queensryche and stuff a bit at the time. And I mean, we've had Queensryche influences in our music in the past, but I usually more so coming from Vito's side of things or from Mike's side of things, but this time I was kind of digging some early mid period Queensryche, and I was just like, you know, I had these ideas at first when I wrote them, they were a little bit more upbeat, and I just started adding a little bit more of a maudlin feel to them, and I said, okay, this is a little different for us, you know. I was worried that people were going to go, oh, this sounds like they're trying to sound like My Dying Bride and blah, blah, blah. But I, you know what, Gary, at this point, I don't really give a shit. People have been trying to insist we trying to be My Dying Bride for 20, 30 years. So like, whatever, they can think whatever they want. The truth of the matter is that it came from old Queensryche and it just got put through the doom filter.
Nice.
And you got Adagio.
That's probably, I'm going to have to go back and listen to it again now, and it's going to open a whole new world for me now. Yeah, the album I was talking about, Adagio, it's one of my favorite albums from, you know, the doom band Solitude Eternus?
Yes. That's, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Texas
boys
love right there.
Those guys. Yeah, love those guys. Cool guys, man. I haven't talked to them in years. I kind of casually knew John and Rob and stuff, but really, really excellent guys. That's a band that never really got its proper due.
Totally agree. I'm a huge fan. I was lucky enough to see Rob Lowe maybe about 4 or 5 years ago do a small little in like a little ice house that we hang out at all the time.
Right.
And he did a show with these guys, and it was just like the career of Robert Lowe, not the actor, of course, guys. let's clear that up. But he was doing Solitude Eternus stuff. He was doing Candlemass stuff. He was doing covers. It was just amazing. And the guitar player and bass player are local guys in the band called The Scourge, who are also now full-time members of the band Hellstar.
Right, right. Okay.
So, yeah. Oh,
loved Hellstar, man. Oh, I was a big Hellstar fan.
Really? I did not. They're like one of the pride and joys of Houston, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Them and Dead Horse, man. Those are.
Oh, I saw Dead Horse back in, oh man, what would that have been, 90, 91? Uh-huh. I saw them years and years ago when I was like 18 years old, man. Incredible.
They were one of the first, now I'll go back and listen to it. I'm like, oh, it's not as heavy as I thought it was. But back when I first started getting into like heavier metal, they were one of the first bands. And I wrote to them and they sent me a copy of their demo. And
nice.
I remember my mom taking me to the mall one day and they had this the brand new cassette of Horsecore. Grabbed it, and you know, I've been a huge fan ever since. I saw growing up in Houston, I saw them so many times. I remember first time I ever did a stage dive was at a Dead Horse show. Girlfriend broke up with me because of I told her I wasn't going to mosh or anything like that. Came to school the next day with a black eye. Yeah, couldn't hide it. But that was at a Dead Horse show. Yeah. And I went to supposedly their last show ever was last year here. And it was just amazing. One of my favorite bands of all time, truthfully.
Yeah, I haven't listened to them in a long time, but I really dug them. And yeah, same thing. I remember thinking they were really heavy, really intense, especially live. And like I said, Hellstar.
Yeah.
Oft overlooked, underrated band. I loved albums like Burning Star and Distant Thunder.
Oh, God. Being local here, James Rivera plays quite a bit. He has a couple of different projects where he'll do like Black Sabbath and that kind of stuff. But he also has his metal extravaganza band where he just plays all kinds of stuff from his career. And it's pretty amazing. You take it for granted when you get to see it a lot.
Oh, right.
It's like, I know people up in Chicago probably, the band, like Trouble is one of my favorite bands of all time.
Oh yeah. I mean, I've seen Trouble like 500 times.
Yeah. See, and I've only seen them, truthfully, with Eric Wagner. I've only seen Trouble with Eric Wagner once in my life.
Oh, okay. Well, you need to go see The Skull.
I did get to see The Skull a couple years ago. They played this outdoor fest thing for the community or something like that. And they were like the only metal band.
Wow.
And they were so amazing. And, you know, I talked to Eric a little bit before the show, but after he realized that I knew like every lyric to the song, then he really came out to me and started talking to me more, you know?
Yeah. 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 No, Ron, you know, Ron Holzner.
Yeah. He was amazing too.
He's a wonderful guy. Love him. Love him to death. You know, he helped us with our fourth album.
That's right. I do remember that.
And
he's not doing, he's having problems now or,
he's still doing it, but man, yeah. Health. I mean, you know, for all of us, man, health, and we get older and stuff, it's hard. Those guys tour a lot. So he's a trooper, man. He's sticking in there, but you know, he's got to start thinking about his health a little bit more and we'll see what happens. But him and the guitar player Lothar, good friends of mine and great, you know, some of the best guys from the Chicago music scene, just awesome.
They created an unmistakable sound that.
Yeah, and it's so cool that The Skull has taken that that trademark sound from Trouble and everything that, you know, and then they've kind of like expanded on it even a little bit. You know, Lothar's put his own stamp on things and added in some cool stuff. And man, I love The Skull. Yeah, that's another one for you people out there. Look up the band The Skull.
I praise them all the time.
Yeah, I'm giving it the second stamp of approval. if you guys out there like that, you know, that traditional doom stuff, man, like you cannot go wrong with The Skull. Their original stuff they've been doing over the past several years is getting better and better. So definitely check it out.
I know they just played a show up in Milwaukee where they just did a complete Trouble set. It's a tribute to the early stuff.
And you know what? And it's great that they do that because, I mean, you know, we're Trouble fans. We geek out on it and everything. But, you know, their original stuff is not to be overlooked. No. It's really good.
Agreed.
Really good.
Which is weird because, like, now the vocalist of Trouble is Kyle Thomas, known from Exhorter.
Right.
Who just put an album out, the first album in, like, 27 years this year.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a great album. And another connection.
I was about to say, another November's Doom connection with Sasha.
Yeah. They have Sasha Horn on drums now, who played on three November's Doom albums.
That's correct. You know? The new Exhorter, I'll sing that praises real quick. I think my favorite thrash album this past year.
Oh, easily. It's incredible.
So good.
Yeah, I mean, there's some good stuff coming out from in the whole thrash circle, but I mean, that Exhorter album, I mean, what a great return, man. You know, what a good boot to the face that album is, you know, and Sasha is perfect for it. I mean, I loved him in our band. He was awesome, you know. I mean, we got so lucky that we've had guys like him, and then to move on to Gary, who's just, you know, the best. I mean, we have such a killer drummer now, but you know, Sasha is just that, you know, that thrash speed thrash metal style is just in his blood, man. You know, that's just a big part of his DNA. I mean, that's why he left us to go be in Forbidden for a while, which was excellent.
Actually, I think I saw them with Forbidden. I saw him perform with Forbidden when they played here.
Oh, yeah. Awesome. Yeah. And I mean, and he just fits so well into that. You know, he was great with us, too. But I'm happy to see and hear him doing what he's doing with the X-Hoarder guys, because I know that that's really like where his heart is at. So, man, yeah, people, if you dig that
kind
of stuff,
don't sleep on it.
Yeah. Yeah. Check it out.
There's a song on there. It's maybe one of my favorite songs of the year. It's called Yesterday's Bones.
Mm-hmm.
The last 2 minutes of that song where it just changes tempo and just the guitar harmonies.
Right.
Fucking phenomenal.
Yeah. Yeah. That band was always underrated. You know, it was unfortunate that the main thing that stuck in people's mind was the Pantera connection thing.
Pantera stole their sound and all that.
Or vice versa. You know, people debating about that. It's like, who cares, man? Just listen to X-Hoarder. Like, that band was a thing all its own. I was a huge X-Hoarder fan in the day. I had The Law tour long sleeve that I wore like all the time back in like 91, 92. Like, man, yeah, 92, I guess it would have been. And yeah, so I was so happy that they're back and that they're kicking ass, and great to see my buddy Sasha in there. It's awesome.
So Kyle, if you're listening to this, come to Houston. You're not that far away. New Orleans is not that far. Come on, man.
Yep,
come play.
Yeah.
And bring Trouble with you.
Yeah. Man. I mean, Kyle, yeah. You know, to be in Trouble and X-Hoarder, like that dude's got it made, man. And Kyle's a great front man. Yes. One of my favorites of all time in metal. So
he has
Kyle,
such a great voice.
Yeah. So cheers to you, dude.
All right. So we've gone away from what we're about to play. So let's get back into that. Of course we are doing, Adagio.
Right.
And we're going to do Varaha, and then we're going into Vildarun. So let's jam some music for a little bit, and we'll be right back.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back, my friends, to MSR Cast. We are still here with Larry Roberts from November's Doom. And we just heard a bunch of new tracks, basically. We heard Wilderun, and I'm saying it correctly now. Varaha, which is another band that Larry turned us on to from the Chicago area. And we heard another track off of Nephilim Grove, which is called Adagio. So let's talk about your other thing that you have going on in your life, which is your other podcast.
Yeah, Geeking Poetic Podcast. It's a show, well, if anybody faithfully listens to you, then they would know because you've been on, we've talked about it and that's everything correct. In the past. But it is not really a music-related thing, although we do occasionally talk a little bit about it. But it's basically a vehicle for myself and November's Doom guitarist Vito Marchese and our erstwhile friend and companion Megan Guess, the woman that tries to keep us both in line. It is just a vehicle for the three of us to talk about all the like geeky stuff we like. I mean, we're all big Star Trek fans. We're all big like action movie fans. We love cartoons and, you know, we all collect different toys and I'm a comic book guy and all that kind of stuff. You know, we even like some horror and suspense and scary movie stuff here and there. And it was just, you know, we used to talk a little bit about this stuff when we did the Doomcast, the November's Doomcast podcast. And it just, after we stopped doing that, Vito and I kind of said, well, okay, we're not doing a podcast talking about November's Doom, but man, it would be awesome if we could keep talking about all the nerdy stuff we like, you know, because this is stuff we talk about at practice. This is stuff we talk about on the plane or on the bus or on the van or in the van, you know, when we're on tour and everything. So, yeah, we started it back in May of 2018. So we will be coming up on our 2 year before you know it. And it's great. Yeah, we have a great time. Megan loves to torture me and see me make an ass out of myself. And every now and then we torture her because she famously hates bananas and mm-hmm. Vito hates pickles. And there's all sorts of, we do goofy stuff on there. We have like little trivia contests and Name That Flick where I quiz them on their movie dialogue trivia. It's just, you know, it's just a little fun thing that we do, and it can be found on all the platforms. You could find it on Spotify and iTunes and Podbean and all of that, or you could just watch and listen to us on YouTube as well, because it is both a podcast and a video related show. We do some video stuff as well.
Yeah, you do a lot of that's what another thing I wanted to make sure people knew, that you guys are on YouTube. So in some of the there's a lot of fun moments that you don't get to see instead of just hear.
Oh yeah, when we do our, what we call our teasers, our parody videos.
I encourage everybody to watch those.
Yeah, those like bubble under, man. I don't think people pay attention to those much, and it's just funny because the people that do watch our teaser clips like love them. Mm-hmm. You know, because if you want to see us just make complete asses of ourselves, that's where to go. But
if you want
to
see you guys inserted into a certain movie.
Oh yeah. 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 Cause it's basically like a parody thing where we do, it's almost like really dumb. Well, I would say bad SNL, although I think SNL is bad SNL a lot of times.
About to say it's the same thing, right?
But it's like SNL, you know, type skits and things we do where we parody everything from you know, Jurassic Park to Terminator to Indiana Jones and The Mummy and all these iconic movies and movie series. And then we just do like, we've got one that's going to be coming out in like a week. I think we're going to be doing, we haven't put out a teaser in a while. We've got one coming out that's all us basically doing a little spoof on some of our favorite action heroes. And
oh, nice.
I have to say, quite honestly, after watching Vito's final cut of it, it's probably the most ridiculous thing we've ever done.
Explosive, you mean?
I mean, it's just ridiculous. Nice. Just the way the the characters we play and the stuff we do, it's so we're reaching new highs or lows, depending on how you want to look at it. So,
I mean, I'll be honest with you. It makes me, the video work that you guys are doing makes me jealous. I would love to emulate something like that. Two of the guys on my show, we have video backgrounds. I'm like, why the hell aren't we doing that?
Yeah, it's time consuming. That's the problem. But see, next time you and Kim come out, we should plan something for when you're in town, and we should make you guys be a part of. Oh,
I'm definitely down for that. I'm not afraid to make a fool of myself in front of a camera.
One of our videos, especially if we do anything Doctor Who-ish, I'll keep it in mind. So
we should do a Kevin Smith's one.
Yeah, well, we've done.
You've done the episode.
We did the Ball Rats one. Yeah, we did them, but there's plenty more. There's plenty more we could spoof. Yeah, we'll definitely talk about that.
Have you seen Reboot yet?
No.
Okay, we'll talk about that later then.
Okay.
On the Metal Geeks episode that you're going to be on, so stay tuned for that, everyone, too. So is there any final things you would like to say about the brand new album that we haven't touched upon yet?
No, not really. I mean, I just think that, as with all November's Doom stuff, but especially now more than ever, for anybody out there that's listening to this, I mean, hopefully you've listened to the few songs we've played already and you've gleaned the idea that we are not a typical doom metal band or even a typical doom death metal band. Just give it a fair chance. I mean, we have a lot of influences. This is our 11th album, man. So we've got a lot of ground to cover. You know, there's a lot of different influences in our stuff. So just kind of give it a chance. And the best thing people can do, I mean, even, you know, people that say, well, I don't buy albums anymore. Or I don't really pay for music much anymore. That's okay, man. The best thing people can do for us is spread the word. You know, if you like what you hear on this program, if you go and check us out on Spotify or YouTube or iTunes or whatever, and you dig it, man, please spread the word. You know, we want, even after 30 years, you know, we're still trying to get the name out there and to get people on board. And it's the best thing that happens to us is, like I said, when people say, I never heard you. You know, I'm 19 years old. I never heard your band before. And I got turned on by a recommendation from YouTube or because somebody posted it on their Facebook page. And now I checked you out and you're like one of my favorite new bands or whatever. You know, that's great. So that's all I can ask is just spread the word. If you like what we do, tell a friend or two.
Or tell all 12. Your friends. No, right. Yeah. Tell all 100 of them.
Exactly.
So I do have a question for you. You talked a little bit about touring earlier. What is your dream tour that you would want to be a part of?
You know, I don't really know at this point in terms of like if there were certain bands that we'd want to tour with the most and stuff. I don't really know because there have been so many opportunities that we have had where we've played with bands that I liked, and then after we played with them, I didn't like them so much anymore.
We're not going to go there.
No, I won't name names. But then there have been other times we played with bands that I wasn't necessarily into or I didn't know much about, and they wound up being like some of our favorites, you know, and we had a great time. I mean, at this point, I don't know. Dream things for me would be I'd love to really do a full United States tour. It's almost impossible for us. Are you still there?
I'm here. Oh yeah, for sure.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. It's almost impossible for us at this point because of the way touring is nowadays and our lives and stuff. You know, we have to do increments, you know, smaller tours, but I really would like to get down south there and do Texas, do New Mexico, Arizona, California. We really have not. Properly, we've played in Texas a few times. We've played different, you know, we've played out west, but we haven't done like a really proper tour out there. You know, we've done the Midwest and the East Coast like a lot and everything, and that's great, but I'd love to do that. I really would love to get over to Asia. I'd love to play Japan.
Oh, wow, yeah.
you know, that is a dream for me. I'd love to do that. I mean, we've gotten to play with, you know, we're good friends with the aforementioned My Dying Bride. You know, Paul and Andy from Bride have been very good friends for 30 years. They talk to each other constantly, you know, they're pals. And we've played shows with them before, but we've never done a tour. So that's probably the closest I could get is I would love for before both, because both of us are getting probably near the end, you know, I mean, I hate to make a down note here at the end, but, you know, both of our bands are getting to the point where I don't know how much longer My Dying Bride or November's Doom is going to carry on. You know, hopefully it'll keep going, but reality creeps in. And I hope that before we end that the two bands get to do something, you know, especially if it was something that could happen here or maybe over in England or something like that. Like, it would be really fun, you know. And again, you know, if people go, well, of course they want to play with Bride because they just want to be My Dying Bride. No, nothing to do with that. It's purely about friendship. You know, we love those guys, guys and girls, you know, in that band. We love them all as people and they're friends and they're like-minded. So that's probably the closest. I mean, I just want to, you know, I think of like little things like I wish I could play on a metal fest where like all the bands I've always wanted to see are also playing. Mm-hmm. We've done some of those, you know, but like, you know, get me on a metal fest in Europe where like Rock Goddess is playing, you know, the all female new wave of British heavy metal right. band from the early, like they reformed recently. I'm dying to see them live because I am a huge Rock Goddess fan. I have been since I was 12 years old. And never got to see him because they never played here. So, like, you know, get me on a festival where, like, Rock Goddess and Dead Brain Cells and...
Oh, my God.
You know...
DBC, I haven't heard that name in a long time.
One of my all-time favorite bands. I have an
autographed DBC CD that I bought at a store when I was, like, you know, 14 or 15.
Yeah, I saw DBC when I was around 15. They were on tour for Universe for their second album.
Yeah, that's the one I have autographed.
Yeah, I saw them on that tour play a small club. It was them and Master, the old death metal band. Yeah. Master. I saw those two bands play together back in 1989, and I mean I saw lots of shows back then, but there was that show in particular. There was just something about it. Again, right place, right time. It blew me away, and I just love DBC. I mean, they only did two proper albums and then a third unreleased album, but absolutely love that band. Only saw them once, you know, 30 years ago. So, you know, it's another band. If they get together and played a festival in Canada, or, you know, if they played Heavy Montreal or something like that, I would love to do something like that. You know, that's more what I think of. You know, I'm bummed that like band like Grass Pop this in 2020 has like the headliners are like Iron Maiden, and I think they might have Judas Priest and all that kind of stuff. We played with them. We played with those bands before too, but you know, it's always so much fun when we get to play on those festivals and all those bands that I love are playing because I get to play in front of a shitload of people and then I get to go geek out to, you know, Maiden doing Aces High or something. It's like, what a day, you know?
Yeah, we just saw them live a few months ago and it was phenomenal.
One of the best Maiden shows I've ever seen, yes. Dude. Like, who would think that?
We were talking about that. It was, we saw them last time before this was like an indoor with the Toyota Center. And then we saw them here. It was called the Woodlands. It's a big outdoor amphitheater, you know, with phenomenal, even though I had a obstructed view of the stage for most of it, but that's okay.
Yeah.
You're still at an Iron Maiden show. It's still better than anything else in your life.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I couldn't believe you have to understand. I've seen Maiden a lot.
Oh, me too.
I've seen them a lot. I saw Iron Maiden back in 1982.
Oh,
so wow. Yeah. Okay. When I was like 9 years old, I went and saw Iron Maiden. They played Chicago Fest. It was an outdoor big festival in Chicago. And like I forget who all played. It was like them and it was weird. It, like on different days, it was like them and Frank Sinatra and I think Joan Jett and the Blackhearts might have played and stuff like that. But I actually got to see Maiden. I was there with like really cool aunt of mine, you know, that was into rock and all that stuff, and went and saw them. I saw them later, you know, I saw them on Seventh Son. I saw them on all sorts of tours, man. So
first time I saw them was 1990, was Anthrax, actually.
No Prayer for the Dying.
Yeah.
Tour. Yeah.
That's the first awesome. Out of, I've seen him maybe close to 20 times since then.
Yeah, I'm probably on par with that. I've seen them probably about that, you know.
Same with Anthrax. I've seen them so many times.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I've seen Anthrax. You know, Anthrax, everybody's going to go, oh, my God. Anthrax are actually my favorite of the big four.
Me too.
So I know.
Megadeth's right behind that.
Yeah, yeah. The other three kind of nebulously drift in and out of the second spot. But Anthrax are just, I don't know, they just... The right hand of Scott Ian just compels me, like his just huge influence on my rhythm playing.
I have a Knot Man tattoo, so that probably says something.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, love Anthrax. Love them. You know, I've gotten to meet them a bunch of times over the years.
Me and, too.
And joke around with them about stuff. And Charlie lives out here in Illinois now. So
that's right. He does.
And everything. And my roommate Willie is very close with those guys and has worked with them on and off over the years. So I've been fortunate to see a lot of Anthrax shows. I saw them. Yeah. I first saw Anthrax back in 87, I guess. Mm. Yeah. Some, I was supposed to see them on Spreading the Disease tour. They were opening for Black Sabbath and Wasp, and that show got canceled, and it was heartbreaking.
Remember the Headbangers Ball tour? They,
yes, I saw him.
One with Halloween.
Halloween and Grim Reaper?
Yeah. Right? I would have loved to see that, but...
Yeah, I saw that.
Wow.
Anyway.
reminiscing time.
Yeah.
Well, I think that we're going to wrap up the metal portion of this interview. So tune in to the Metal Geeks episode that'll be coming out right after this. We have already pre-talked about how geeky we're going to get. But we're going to get pretty geeky.
Yep.
Thanks again for coming on to MSRcast. Again, check out the brand new November's Doom album, Nephilim Grove, available now on Prophecy Productions. Go out and get it. Buy the vinyl, I recommend. The artwork is just phenomenal.
Yeah, or buy the box set.
Buy them all.
It's got everything, you know. Get one of those. Very collectible.
That's right. So, again, everybody can find... Where can people find information about November's Doom?
You could find us. The easiest thing is to go to www.novembersdoom.com. You can find us on YouTube at, youtube.com/novembersdoom1989. That's, you can find our videos. There's interviews. There's all sorts of cool stuff on there. Of course, we're easy to find on Facebook, Instagram, all that stuff. Again, just put in November's Doom or November's Doom 1989. That's the year we started. You can find us on there and reach out to us, man. We talk to everybody. I'm constantly talking to people. They message me from Russia and they message me from India and they message me from all over the world. And I love it. Love to hear from people, man. So we will talk to you.
Awesome. So as we usually say on the end of each episode of MSRcast is we say keep it metal. But I have one last thing I would like to say to you. Doom on, my friend.
Doom on. I have spoken.
All right. Thank you, man.
Thanks, dude.
for listening to another fine podcast brought to you by MSR Productions. All rights reserved, blah, 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 blah. For reviews, archives of our podcasts, and all your other metal geekery needs, please visit metalgeeks.net. Keep it geeky. Keep it metal.